This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
We are doing great. I before I get into the Browns and we get into the fan crews and all this stuff, hey, so you went to UC, right? Graduated from Cincinnati, and you were both Kelseys were there at the same time as you, right?
Yeah, so I was actually in between both Kelseys as far as Jason was a year over me and Travis was a year under me.
All right. Did you have any idea that they would be what they are right now when you were at UC with these guys?
So for Jason, maybe not so much Travis. Travis was kind of like a late bloomer as far as, you know, how he took off in college, his senior year.
Right.
Man, it's been amazing to watch their careers kind of unfold, man, as the years have gone by, man. So
coincidentally, I'm wearing my UC Bearcat sweatshirt today.
He didn't even know that he was wearing that for you today. Yes. Impressive.
Bearcat.
What's going on with all the injuries in the NFL? And I say that knowing that it happens every year, John, but this week was a bad week. And this, you know, you're 17 games now, you're playing on short weeks, these guys are. And I just keep thinking, I know you want more product out there, Roger Goodell, in the NFL, but man, I think the players are paying the price, John.
Yeah, it's probably a lot of different things, you know, with it being a lot, you know, quicker turnaround where guys are playing more often. And then you think about, you know, later in the season, guys' bodies are banged up and even the stretching element, you know, making sure, you know, guys are, you know, as the season gets on, you know, kind of things start to fall off and, you know, just overall taking care of your body as an athlete.
I'm sure you keep a little bit of an eye on the Browns on what's going on right now. It has been such an up and down battle for the Browns over the last couple of years. Like 1 year, I think they're going to be good, and then this year, it's been a tremendous letdown. Just your thoughts on your old team?
Yeah, as far as this part of the year and the record, you know, I had to kind of live this too many times in my time in Cleveland, and you know, at this point in the season, you know, it's guys really putting on for next year, you know, getting their reps in and being the best they can be. Because, you know, obviously, you know, you think about record, you know, that we have right now, you think about people getting fired or, you know, people losing their jobs. So really, you know, I always looked at it like I was playing for next year already at this point in the season. So
when you were here, and correct me if I'm wrong, you played for four different head coaches during your parts of five seasons here. Pat Shurmur,
yep.
Chud, Mike Pett, and Hugh Jackson.
Yep, I had four and five.
How difficult is that for a player?
It's difficult just in the aspect of having to learn new schemes, having to kind of reinvent yourself every year for a new coach. You're having to, you know, prove yourself over to a new coach. But one part that it did help me with, you know, after I left Cleveland was the fact that I was able to pick up defenses really fast. So the fact that, you know, I had, you know, it's actually three different coordinators, because I had Ray Horton twice. Mm. So being able to play in a 4-3 and a 3-4, it definitely tests your range of what you can play and how versatile you are.
Wait, does that mean you played for 9 different head coaches while you were in the NFL? If you had 4 yeah. here, 1 in New England, Tampa, New Orleans, Buffalo, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah, yep.
You should write a book about that. How many other guys played for 9 different head coaches?
When you put it like that, it is pretty interesting. Huh? I didn't think about it like that.
I'm ready for you to write a book about this stuff. Just when you were here, what was the best part about being here and what you remember about the fans? Because you're about to do this cruise, and you're going to be reliving a lot of the memories, and we're probably firing some of the early questions at you that you're going to get on this cruise. What are your best memories of being a Brown?
Honestly, it was the fan base. I know a lot of guys say that, and a lot of being in Cleveland, that's what our team is really built around is the fans and how strong they feel about our team. And it was always one of those things when you know they're going to let you have it after a bad game, but you also know that they're going to let you have it in a good way after a good game. And it was just always that support, that unconditional support, I guess, you know. Year after year, as we came in, and knowing we had the fans behind us, so that was always what I looked forward to.
John Hughes joining us, former Browns defensive lineman. Is it my imagination, or has the running back position and the idea of running the football kind of come back in vogue in the NFL? Because it certainly seemed to disappear for a while.
Yeah, no, I think it has for sure, and especially when we talk about the AFC North, right? That was what we pride ourselves on, running the ball, and then, you know, on defense side, you know, stopping the run. So, I definitely agree with you. I think the running game's coming back. I feel like running backs have always been an important position. And then over the years, you know, we've seen those players being dual threats now. They come out of the backfield for passes, and then, you know, obviously run the ball. So, I definitely agree with that.
I want to talk to you a little bit about college football too, and where we're at in college football, especially like going to Cincinnati. And I think about the year when you were down there, like that program really started to take off with, what would you say, like once they hit the Big East and to be just like a national power, and like what was your thought process when you went to Cincinnati, and what do you think of the program now?
Yeah, so when I the year before I got there in 2006 playing season. Mm-hmm. They had a huge upset win at home against Rutgers when Ray Rice was there and everything, and that kind of put them in more of my radar as I wanted to when I was coming out of school. And I was actually committed to Michigan State, and during the coaching change with John L. Smith and Coach Kelly coming to Cincinnati, I ended up losing my commit to Michigan State, and then I came to Cincinnati and committed. I was one of Kelly's first commits at Cincinnati.
D'Antonio was at Cincinnati and then ended up going to Michigan State, right? Weird.
Yep. So, right. And then, my time in Cincinnati, man, it was, they say everything happens for a reason. I was, you know, able to win 3 Big East championships, go to 2 BCS bowls, and the Orange Bowl and Sugar Bowl. I mean, I had, you know, a great college experience and college career at Cincinnati.
You surprised that things haven't clicked in Cleveland for an extended period of time?
Yeah, I feel like we can all say that because it's been so long, and you figure at some point things have to turn, and I feel like they did for a little bit in Cleveland, but you know, I think, you know, it feels like we're back kind of in that, going the other direction again, but I still feel confident that we're going to figure it out at some point. It's just the matter of getting all the pieces together. I remember being in the locker room and we feel like we had all the pieces, but then it might be something outside of the locker room, right, that kind of gets everything involved. But overall, man, I think we're starving for for a dominant team, and I think that's what we're really looking for. We don't want an 8-8 team. We want to see a dominant team and a team that we can feel confident week in and week out going into the games. So,
John, where are you living now? Are you in Columbus, Cincinnati, or where are you living?
Yeah, I'm in Columbus right now.
Are you? And I was just going to throw this at you too. I mean, it's growing up in Central Ohio playing football down there, it was a good year for Central Ohio again this year with Watterson and Liberty winning state championships. Is there a sense of pride for those high school players that are coming out of Central Ohio? Because you definitely can feel it here with Canton and Massillon and then all the Northeast Ohio teams. But mm-hmm. I look at how even how high school football has grown in Central Ohio over the last in my lifetime at least. Just that sense of pride, being from Lincoln, from Gahanna, and then watching these teams win state championships. Like, are you rooting for Liberty? Are you rooting for Watterson when these guys make it to the state championships?
Yeah, definitely. I actually was going to pay attention the whole time throughout the playoffs. Liberty's not too far from my house. And I had actually trained some of the guys that played for Liberty. So I've been paying attention to how the playoffs were going. And it was great to see them, And obviously, when we're talking about powerhouses in Ohio, you talk about the St. Ed's, the Molars, right?
Right.
And for them to play those teams and play them as tough and get the win, back to back, for the Final Four and then the state championship, it was pretty cool to see.
It was pretty cool. It was a great state final to watch those guys. Yeah. And then the Watterson guys were a bunch of Ohio State. It was like all Ohio, it was the Belisarius, or everywhere you turn, you run into a different Belisarius. So, all right. So tell me just, go ahead, Jeff. Go one more time.
You ever been on a cruise?
Yeah.
My first cruise was the inaugural cruise this earlier this year for the Browns cruise. That was my first one.
Nice.
What was it like?
Oh, man, it was amazing. I mean, just as far as the cruise aspect, just being on the boat. I at first, I didn't know how it would be, if it'd be shaky or, didn't know my, expectation of being on a ship. And then all the things they have, you don't even feel like you're on a ship, which is crazy. But we had a great time. Me and my wife went.
Sounds good. All right, so that cruise again is March 3rd through the 7th, presented by Seaside Events in partnership with the Browns. You want to hang out with John Hughes? You can talk. Look, if it's Ohio football, you're talking about it, right?
Oh yeah, most definitely. And then it was being on the cruise. It was great because you get to see different generations, different times of Browns football, right? Even for me, getting to sit there and hang out and talk to, Kevin Mack, Eric Metcalf about their playing days, pretty much in the same locker room, just in different eras. So when these fans get to come, they get to really see different generations of Browns football. And it's pretty cool.
And you get to be a fan too, right? That's the fun part.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely.
All right, John. Hey, thank you. We appreciate you taking time to talk to us. Have a lot of fun on the cruise, and happy holidays to you and your family.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
Thank you, John.
John Hughes, former Browns defensive lineman. He'll be on that Browns fan cruise again March 3rd through the 7th. If you want more information on that Browns fan cruise, just go to clevelandbrowns.com and look up Browns fan cruise. I'm sure you all have gigantic plans. I'm hearing stuff to even get a seat at a bar to watch the finals of the NBA Cup. Who's in the NBA Cup finals?
Be Oklahoma City and Milwaukee.
Oh, there you go. I mean, everyone has that written. That's like Super Bowl, right?
It's become
someone's going to get a trophy when it's all said and done.
It apparently has become a little bigger deal because the winning team members get $500,000. Now, for some guys in the NBA, that's payday, regular payday. Other guys, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. So, what we should do now?
I'm hoping you'll tell me.
A little NFL rapid fire with Dan Menigan. Boom, 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 boom. Here's Dan Menigan.
All right, gentlemen, let's begin in Detroit, in Motown, Pittsville, USA, whatever you want to call it.
Pittsville, USA. I love
true.
It.
True.
All right. I just am going to read a list of humans here.
Oh, boy, okay? This is bad.
Yeah. This is a list?
Defensive end Aiden Hutchinson, defensive tackle Aleem McNeil, defensive lineman Marcus Davenport, defensive lineman John Kaminsky, linebacker Alex Alonzi?
Close enough.
Whatever. Linebacker Malcolm Rodriguez. Linebacker Derek Barnes. Linebacker Jalen Reeves-Maben. Cornerback Carlton Davis. Cornerback Innis Rakestraw Jr. Cornerback Emmanuel Mosley. Safety, whatever. Long name that I'll just butcher and feel bad for his family. add in also David Montgomery in there as well. Guys, they want to add an 18th game, and here I just read every single injury on the defense for the Lions. Add in running back David Montgomery. If we go to the offensive side of the ball, they've lost offensive linemen left and right on top of that. This was the best team in the NFL.
And those guys,
shoot,
those
three
guys
weeks
are,
ago?
Those guys are out for the year.
Done. D-O-N-E, done. We have watched a Super Bowl contender now in 3 weeks, essentially, become a team that we're not 100% sure could get out of the first round.
And arguably the most entertaining team to watch in the NFL.
Done.
Arguably.
So are you're not giving them any hope to win the Super Bowl?
Andy,
you go through this list.
No, I know they're
up. The key to their offense has been the combination of David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs.
Za'Darius Smith, it might have been there the longest of anybody on the defensive line.
Yeah.
Remember, they gave him a week off, too, when he first got there.
And they want to add an 18th game. Are we sure this is a good idea, Andy? Like, honestly, is this 18-game thing? Like, we know it's going to happen. We know it's a cash
I think
grab.
It's a better idea if they add an extra bye week for these teams. So, I mean...
spread it out even more?
I know. You guys complain about college football? College football. Now these best teams are, you know, what are they, 16, 17? High school football, 16 games to win the state championship now. Where are you guys going, man? They keep playing more and more football at every level.
I get that, man. But in the NFL, man, you are talking
it's a different beast.
Creme de la creme. The guys who are the biggest, fastest, strongest human beings that can play this sport.
And can inflict damage on other human beings.
Running against each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, we're going to run into a week 18 of backup quarterbacks galore and a first round with even more backup quarterbacks.
Do you realize how many Browns are on the IR?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
17.
Yeah.
It's nuts. That's part of it. That's what the first thing I asked John Hughes about all the injuries today. I wonder, you know, they're trying to temper all that by cutting down on the amount of practice time and the amount of hitting and the amount of full pads and everything else. Maybe that's the problem. Although other teams that do such things also have injuries. I don't know what it is.
I mean, Kansas City's getting, their offensive line is super banged up. They've been going through wide receivers left and right. They played the whole preseason with their starters.
So what's
including?
Do you think they're
Patrick
going backwards or not, man? They're going to 18 games. It's coming.
No, well, we know, but there's obviously an issue. I think you have to. I think that the NFL as a whole and the league needs to do some deep dive on: are we better off having contact in, you know, on a regular basis? Are we more contact practices?
You mean okay?
More contact. You know, I would completely eliminate the preseason. Part of it is just that there's so much work. It starts in July and it keeps going and going and going.
I 1,000% agree with you on the preseason stuff. Like, if you're going to get hurt, you don't want to get hurt in a preseason game.
Or you don't want to start the injury cycle in the preseason as well.
That's fair.
You know, but on the other hand, Andy, sometimes those guys who don't play in the preseason appear to be more susceptible to injury. You know what I mean? I mean, what is it? I don't know the answer to it. I don't know that the teams know the answer to it because they all have different approaches.
It's not like you got guys playing both ways too, right? I mean, everyone's got a specialty for the most part is what it feels like now. And I don't see this going backwards. I see 18 games. I see more teams. So
it's just,
I don't think it's going the other way.
And the problem is, man, it's only going to affect the product, which is the other part of it, is at some point you're going to really water this thing down. All right, on things that are affecting the product.
You do realize that everything has been watered down in the last 15 years, right? I just said it. High school, look how many games. What do you got to win? 3, 4, 5, 6 games to win a high school state championship, if you're lucky enough to be around that long. College now, we're adding more games than we've ever seen before. You want to win a national championship, you now have to win possibly in the first round. You know, and then hope to get to the national semifinals, and that's another game there. And why would you not think the NFL? This is the way the game is right now. I don't ever see it going backwards.
All right. Right here. Is this something? Okay? I'm stealing the old Letterman bit. We're stealing the Jeff Phelps bit, whatever you want to call it. Is this something?
Well, let's go Letterman.
Letter Phelps bit.
The top three running backs by yards. Just total yards. Okay, I know, not a perfect metric, whatever. We're not here to argue that part of it. Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs.
And what were they all doing last year?
Playing for somebody else.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Is this the wave of the future to have these veterans?
And if Joe Mixon hadn't been hurt and missed some games, he'd have been up there too.
You could put Tony Pollard in there. He's seventh on this list too, if you want to really go down that road. But anyway, is this the wave of the future when it comes to running backs, or is this the exemption to the rule? Are running backs still a dime a dozen? We have just found the group that are more in Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, or has the running back really come back?
Well, you have three guys there that you mentioned, Dan, who were really good regardless. You know, they were good with their previous teams. And now they go to new teams and they're getting worked like crazy. So I think it shows the value of a good running back. Think about Joe Mixon. Cincinnati didn't have a real good offensive line. People thought Joe was done. Houston picks him up for a seventh-round pick, turns him loose in a good offense behind a good line. Look what he's done this year. He's been outstanding. If I'm the Browns, that's what I'm looking for.
Let me ask you this. We're going into what, the 6th and 15th? This is week 15?
You can pull that in.
No, wait, this is week...
Time is a flat circle, Andy.
Yeah, what is it? What week? That was week 15 we just had, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So something we're going like into week... No, that's all right. We're going into week 15, 16, 17.
Again, time so we're is going a flat
into
circle.
Week, we're going into week 15, and there are only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys with more than 1,000 yards on the ground. Is that low or high? That's low. Don't you think it's low?
I mean,
we used to think 1,000-yard rushers was like the end-all, be-all. Now, we could end up with, there's a bunch of guys in the 900s, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Guys that have 900 yards or more that should probably surpass into 1,000 yards. But when you think about the fact that you have a 17th game on top of that, shouldn't you have more 1,000-yard rushers, wouldn't you think?
You're seeing, I think, in some situations, you know, splitting backfield duties. That's part of it. You know, look at David Montgomery. He's on his second team, but he's out for the year now. But same type of deal. This is his second year as being that veteran who changed teams, and he was outstanding. He might have been the poster child for, hey, bring in a vet and watch what he can do.
All right, big discourse this week involving another running back as Jonathan Taylor took a run, ran to the end zone, and proceeded to drop the ball before crossing the end zone, thus fumble, touchback. There's been a lot of arguments on both sides on this, one of them being, we need to get rid of the touchback rule. This is ridiculous that the ball goes out of the end zone. It's a touchback for the other team, considered a fumble for a touchback. And there's another group of people who are coming back and going, how about you just don't drop the ball before you walk through the end zone?
And there you go.
I believe in the second, but I also don't think it should be a touchback. I'm not buying that. I think the ball should go back to the one or the two. What if the ball gets punched out by a defender and no one has possession? Like, I don't think that the defense necessarily deserves the ball for punching the ball out and it goes out of the back of the end zone.
I like the rule. Penalizes guys for being knuckleheads.
But it's not necessarily always a knucklehead play. It could be, you know, a good defensive play, but is it worthy of getting the football if you didn't recover it? I hate it. I can't stand it. I think you should get the ball to one.
A certain former Bedford Bearcat mentioned the other day, if I'm a coach, I am telling anybody who gets into the end zone on their feet, you do not drop the ball until you run out of the back of the end zone. Couldn't agree with that former Bedford Bearcat more.
I agree with that too, but I also think that if somebody makes a strong play on defense and they're able to punch the ball without obtaining possession of the ball and it goes out of the back of the end zone, that ball should be at the 1 yard line. I don't think they did enough to earn the ball for their team at the 20 the other way. Or maybe give them the ball at the 5 yard line or wherever the ball went out of bounds.
Aren't there so many?
Why does it have to go back to the 20? If the ball went out of bounds at the 1, why shouldn't the ball be there at the 1 for the other team if you want to do it that way?
Aren't there so many little rules in the NFL?
That's why the international...
So many little confusing things.
That's why internationally people don't like it. It's too complicated.
Soccer. Ball. Goal. Kick.
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
And between you and the goal when the ball is kicked.
By the way, didn't somebody, speaking of soccer, somebody got a red card and in their pocket they had a reverse card from Uno? And they held it right back up at the referee. Did you see that last week?
That's funny.
I did not see that.
Yeah, so they had something funny. They had something in their pocket, and they held it up, and it was like, reverse, so that the red card didn't matter.
I hope the ref laughed. That'd be
probably
funny.
Probably not.
He got two red cards for that.
Probably not. Those refs don't exactly have a sense of humor.
No, they don't. Not at all. Is that it?
That's all we got.
Man, that was quick.
It was fabulous.
I really want to talk to you about Ohio State here for a second, and something that Kirk Herbstreit said. So we're going to bring that up when we come back. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Sam Amico, 1 o'clock. Herbie said that Ohio State might be better off playing this game on the road. Well, I'm sure that probably aggravated some of the Tennessee fans as well as Ohio State fans. And he just, and I'll give you the quote. It was, you come home after what just happened in the Ohio State-Michigan game. Ohio State loses for a fourth time in a row to Michigan. There's a melee after the game. All of the social media stuff is happening after the game. My only point, and I talked to ESPN analyst Joey Galloway about this after the show, my only point is that you can imagine what Ohio State will do if they go 3-and-out, and God forbid there's a sack against the best defensive line in the country. If that quarterback, Will Howard, gets sacked and there's a scoop and score and you're down 7-0, Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, Will Howard, and how about a poor field goal kicker who missed two kicks against Michigan that a lot of people say, quote, unquote, cost him the game. God forbid that kid comes out and misses a field goal in the game. My only point is there are so many great fans, but right now under this climate, under the circumstances, yeah, I do think it would be better for them to go on the road and deal with the hostility of playing at Tennessee, but it is what it is, and they're at home, and hopefully their fan base will be supportive, not only on great plays, but if they get down, they deal with the adversity. Hopefully they'll get in their corner and try and to will Ohio State to a victory. I think it would be better for them to go on the road to play, to have to deal with the hostility of playing Tennessee. Do you agree or disagree with what he said?
It sounds a little preposterous to me, but I can see where he makes the point. Home game, Ohio State, better every day of the week. But, you know, he's the college football guy, former Ohio State quarterback. His point is certainly well taken. I understand what he means. I just disagree.
You know, I think the point there, too, is that he and Joey Galloway go back, obviously, to when they played, and they're, like, super close. And, you know, it's one Buckeye alumni. No matter how he wants to frame it, it's a Buckeye alumni talking to another Buckeye alumni about what he thinks the atmosphere at Ohio Stadium will be. And if Ohio State does get down early, I think Herbie's right. I mean, I hate to say it. I don't ever think they should be on. Like, you always want a home game. I don't care how mad you are about the Michigan game. If Ohio State comes out and scores early, then everything's going to be fine. And, you know, fans in the stadium will be able to turn the page and go, okay, I get it. Okay, I'm over Michigan. Like, that's about the only – I'm over Michigan for the moment is probably what I should say.
Shouldn't Ohio State fans be better than that? I mean, are you a fan, or do you just want to be attached to what you think is a winner? I mean, if you're an Ohio State fan, you go cheer for Ohio State.
Yeah,
you're playing a home game in a playoffs with a chance to win a national championship.
It's a different
beast. Why would you boo? Why would you boo?
Because you're not happy with the way things are going, and you think that your offensive coordinator ran yourself out of the last game that you played. You're upset that you lost to Michigan. But I kind of understand Herbie here. I don't want to rip him for giving us his opinion.
No, I don't. I'm not.
I mean, that's an Ohio State quarterback, former Ohio State quarterback.
I don't rip him for that.
And for giving you his opinion.
He might have some valid points there. I just turn it back on Ohio State fans. Why would you boo? Your team has a chance to win a national championship. So what? You
lost to
Michigan.
Spoiled rotten with one of the most expensive rosters in all of college football?
Well, no, okay.
I'm not. I'm just telling you that.
Hey, no, I'm not arguing that point. I couldn't agree with you more.
I've talked to this to plenty of people.
Couldn't agree more.
There was a vast shift in Ohio State football when Jim Tressel and company won that national championship in 2002. Everything changed.
Sense of entitlement.
Yeah, like prior to that, you'd go on the road with Ohio State and you'd be like, "This is unbelievable!" Like. Look at all these Ohio State fans on the road to see their team go play, and what great pride, and Then they won the national championship then, and everything just got elevated, man. And the game has elevated itself, and there are other things, and Jim Tressel set a new standard for what was going on there when it happened, and it wasn't about just winning. It was about winning the national championship. And then when they felt like Trussell couldn't do enough, they got rid of him. They showed him the door. They figured out a way to do it. Tattoos. Come on. Really? And then all of a sudden, Urban Meyer takes it to the next level. Like it or not. Right? And so now you're sitting here, and a former Ohio State quarterback kind of makes you look in the mirror. I think that's what he did. He made Ohio State fans look in the mirror. And what you might see may not be as pretty as you think it is. And if they go down early in this game, it could get a little hostile.
And I think Ohio State fans are better than that. At least I hope they will be. If things don't go beautifully. I've always been amazed at the sense of entitlement of some fan bases, where you think you're entitled to, you know, absolute elite everything. We've seen that in our town, you know.
For sure.
And it's just never the way I've looked at sports. So I do have a difficult time, and that's on me.
Dan, you think do you think Hurry's right? Let's start there.
No, this is ridiculous. The fact that this is even a conversation, we've sitting here banging the drum forever to A, well, at least I have. I'm not going to lump you in with the first part of this. A, get rid of the balls. This is ridiculous. Why are we doing this?
Sure.
B, why aren't we holding these games at the home fields? Because we know it's going to be electric.
Oh, so I can't wait.
It's going to be on fire.
Hell, I can't wait.
Would we ever want to remove these from home fields? Why?
No
idea. I don't care. You're in the
playoff. Why? Because you're going back. Well, so let's go back to the history of what the bowl games are, right? Bowl games, originally, there weren't that many.
Correct.
And you got to go to the Rose Bowl.
And it was a big deal. You got to go somewhere cool.
And, you know, you got to go.
Yeah.
And you got to go somewhere warm. And more than that, you got to extend your practice year by 6 weeks. That was really the big benefit of being able to go to a bowl game.
Coaches were all excited.
Yeah, right.
Well, and you got the opportunity to go somewhere that it was very hard to get to. It was hard at one point in life to get to Pasadena, California. And it was a big deal that you were able to do it. In the same way that the Pro Bowl used to be in Hawaii, because it was a big, expensive deal to go to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
I get it back then. The problem is it's now. And things have changed and things have evolved. And having these games on home fields for the first round, heck, it should be the second round, too.
Could be real. I think so, too, Dan.
It's going to be electric. It's going to be
Had to do, like, I still don't have a problem with Ohio State playing, or if Ohio State can win, playing Oregon in the Rose Bowl on New Year's.
Well, like, of course you don't, because otherwise you're playing in Oregon.
Yeah, but I don't have a problem with those big bowl games, the big ones, right? Sugar. You know, even somehow along the way, the Fiesta Bowl became a big deal, right? It wasn't always a big deal, but then when they got in that rotation for a national championship, we're going to Phoenix. It's going to be awesome.
You know why? Frito-Lay.
That's why?
Threw a lot of money at that, baby.
I mean, yachts, country club memberships, backslapping. You know, it's college athletics. That's where all that stuff comes back to. But yeah, like the whole idea of taking this off the campus, I don't care how bad things have gotten. You are in the college football playoff. You have the ability to hold a home playoff game. You hold the home playoff game knowing that, sure, when Ryan Day comes out, you may have a group of people going, boo.
How's that go?
But then after that, it's going to be electric in there. The band's going to be going. It's going to be loud as all get out. And you're going to have 90,000 screaming fans in there. It's going to be outstanding.
Let's go to Southern Summit County. Dan is in New Franklin. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Hello there. Doing all right.
What do you got?
Well, the point I wanted to make was a couple minutes ago, you guys were talking about how the fans, the hometown fans, would boo and try to almost hold accountable the team if something wrong were to go on early, especially mm-hmm. early.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem that I'm now seeing, my first reaction was, that's wrong. They're just kids. We're just yelling at the kids. But with NIL
those kids are all
money,
making more money than you.
And that's exactly right. With the money that they're getting paid, with the sponsorships, with the fact that here we are paying these tickets and contributing money to the team, it's become
professional.
it's be, it's become professional. So now the fan base is trying to hold, what are you doing for my money? And it's a, I don't necessarily want to call it a problem. I feel as though it is, but it's one of the consequences of the NIL stuff.
It's a great point, Dan. I don't disagree with that at all. I think he's right that we've moved.
He's right as well.
We've moved into professional college football, and maybe that's the other part of it. And are you going to be mad at Ohio State fans if they boo, if they have come out to a slow start?
I'd be disappointed.
I don't know. Can you be? I mean, it's part of the game. I mean, you know that.
I wouldn't be mad.
When you accept that jersey to go play at Ohio State, you know that you are expected to be the best of the best. You are. And if you can't fill out the form in that seat that looks like an egg in Men in Black, then you're not the best of the best. And you better be able to not have rabbit ears and continue to play on, right?
Has that been on cable for you recently?
No. Why have I brought it up?
That's like the fourth Men in Black reference that you've made this week.
Have they all been the best of the best?
No, not that one. A lot of it's been the flashy pen.
Oh, the flashy pen thing.
That's why I'm wondering if there's like a marathon going on at some station. I don't know about that. I need to be watching.
I just think it's a great invention.
The first one is really good. After that, it kind of...
Yeah, there we are. Yeah, what are you going to do? Sam Amico is going to join us next. We're going to talk a little bit about the Cavaliers, where they're at. And, of course, you know what we're talking about. The gigantic, humongous, over-the-top, bigger than the Super Bowl, NBA Cup. It's tonight, Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.